Chapter 13. Town Wee. No, I'm not dead. And yes, I've still got your research material. I don't plan to sell it off. Don't make me change those plans. Cohen A. No, I didn't forget. And you know I found what you were looking for. I just don't need 3 million credits that badly. Which is still my price, by the way. Extract from queued textcom messages awaiting transmission from Boba Fett, Mandalore, via Arcania and Kamino comm nodes. Imperial Star Destroyer Bloodfin, Task Force Assembly Area, off Fondor. Kitus refused to let his recent brush with Luke rattle his composure as he stepped through the hatch of Bloodfin's hangar, Tahiri at his heels. He'd been duped with a brilliant Falanasi illusion, and had his stealth X almost ripped from under him. That had left him reeling, but not for long. He realized that it wasn't an indication of his own vulnerability. It was a benchmark revealed to him as part of his destiny. Luke had come after him. That showed how desperately urgent it now was for the Jedi to stop him. Luke was pulling out all the stops. The illusion, however masterful, was the best that Luke and his entourage could do, or else they'd have used it to defeat him there and then. The attack on his stealth X. That was the best Luke and his wingmate could do, too. They couldn't stop him or grab him, even with chunks of his fighter missing, and they didn't have what it took to kill him, militarily or emotionally. Luke was the greatest Jedi Master, and he'd just exposed the absolute limits of his powers. A suicidal gamble in any war. No. No, the Force had laid out the evidence for Kitus, and all he had to do was look at it from the right perspective. Kitus truly knew his enemy now, and he knew that Luke's best shot wasn't good enough. And neither is yours, Admiral. Here she comes.
You seem in a positive mood, Colonel, said Neothel's voice from some way behind him. Good to see a spring in your step, so soon after being scraped off your own deck.
Kitus followed an Imperial aide through the maze of passageways into the citadel of the destroyer, the most heavily protected sections that were the heart of the warship. It was a much smaller destroyer than the Anakin Solo, an unfamiliar layout, with lower deckheads and narrower spaces. When he stopped outside the compartment designated for the meeting, he studied the ship's badge on the bulkhead.
"Thank you for your concern, Admiral Neothel," he said.
The shield depicted a four-legged, fanged creature with cloven hooves like daggers, a blood-red frill raised like a mane along the length of its arched neck. Neothel paused to look as well.
"Think of all the extra work that would land on my desk if anything happened to you."
"I heal fast."
The animal was caparisoned in ancient battle harness, trampling a figure. Its own rider, judging by the matching leathers.
"How ungrateful. A beast trying to destroy the master who guides it safely through the battlefield."
"Or unseating him for using the spurs too much."
Neothel inhaled, as if she were savoring the chemical smells of recent work on board.
"Lovely thing, a new ship."
Pelion emerged from the compartment, creaseless and composed, and fixed a steady, dark gaze on Kitus. It was their first encounter since Kitus had entered military ranks.
"Our eponymous animal, the Bloodfin,"
Pelion said.
"Most apt. I thought it was just a simple marine predator that was only a threat in its home waters. A borrowed name, Colonel, because they both share this splendid red appendage."
Pelion ran his fingertip over the glowing red pigment. Kitus felt the old admiral's curious blend of disciplined anger and enjoyment.
We once used these blood fins as cavalry mounts, because they were ferocious fighters in their own right, with a much greater range than you might imagine. They remain a reminder to us that we should all be careful of the dangerous creatures we ride, because we have to dismount sooner or later. If we are cruel or careless, the beast may even throw us, and once the rider falls under its hooves, it will devour him. The silence hung like a weight for 3 beats.
"I'm glad we have speeder bikes these days," Tahiri said.
Kytus went into the meeting unsure whether Tahiri just couldn't follow the subtext, or if she was much more arch and sly than he realized. He decided on the latter. Once the business of agreeing on plans for the engagement began, personal barbs were temporarily sheathed, and everyone concentrated on the task at hand, which was the isolation of Fondor and the containment of any fleet assets it might still have on its surface. Kytus examined the hollow images carefully. It was hard to tell from reconnaissance imaging whether the vast numbers of vessels and assorted craft on Fondor, one giant manufacturing site, in effect, were operational or customers' orders.
"In the absence of the mine net containing surface-based threats, this is a time-consuming task," Kytus said. "I suggest placing 3rd and 4th Fleet fighter wings inside the ring for recce and rapid response to counterattacks from the surface, and a destroyer and frigate flotilla to hit whatever dares raise its head. Meanwhile, we devote the rest of the 2 fleets to taking out the orbital yard's own defenses, and then land an assault force to secure them. The Imperials will be on the outer ring to counter the inevitable reappearance of the Fondorian fleet."
Pelion stroked the first knuckle of his forefinger down his mustache, nose to lip, as if lost in thought while he studied the holochart.
"The aim is still to take the yards in one piece."
"Yes,"
said Neothel firmly, looking to Kytus, even though Pelion was asking.
"Which, as I'm sure you've made allowance for, means holding the yards long-term, which means we also need to hold Fondor itself long-term, quite apart from neutralizing its fleet, or else we'll be under siege ourselves on those orbitals."
Pelion held up 3 fingers. He glanced at Tahiri.
3 distinct battles in one, 2 of them possibly a semi-permanent commitment, unless we can perform a mass lobotomy on the Fondorian government and people overnight, and get them to love us."
Kytus felt the trap creak, but saw no pit beneath. Ordinary beings often made those mistakes. He wasn't prey to uncertainty. If he changed his mind, it was due to dynamic risk assessment.
"If you're saying we can't do this, or that the commitment is too much for the Imperial Remnant, then say so. Most expeditionary wars involve entering places where we're far from welcome. That's what wars are."
Pelion was still stroking his mustache.
"I'm just saying that subduing a civilian population is much harder than smashing a fleet." "Not if you project sufficient power," said Kytus.
Pelion didn't blink.
"Which force are we talking about? The unseen one available to you, or the one that goes bang?" "Conventional force. Bombing civilian populations can be a desperately slow way of breaking their will, actually. In my very long experience, most don't give in until they're standing in rubble, and there's not even a stick left to fight with. In the shorter term, they just dig in. It's their home. They've nowhere to retreat.
Kytus ignored the lure of an argument. They had different priorities. Kytus wanted Fondor broken as an example to everyone of how serious he was about forging a united galaxy capable of responding to those yet unknown but very real threats like the Yuuzhan Vong. But Pelion was looking at a working asset that the GA or the Imperials could claim. Neothel probably favored that, too. It was small scale and, in galactic planning terms, short-term.
How very typical.
Neothel was very quiet, and she hadn't said a word about Jedi stealth X's wandering around at will in the fleet assembly area. Any commander would have been in a flap about that, unless they thought it was a problem that didn't have their name on it.
I'm not stupid, Admiral. Thoughts?
Said Kytus, looking her way.
I've often fought the urge to reduce a planet to molten slag myself,
Neothel said, unmoved.
Probably for totally different reasons to you, Colonel. But I agree with Gil. Holding what we seize is going to be a drain on resources, unless Fondor shows some pragmatism and rolls over. Let's give them an extra reason for doing that, beyond annihilation.
Such as, said Pelion,
make it worth their while. They rejoin the GA and play by our rules, and allow a token force to remain for a while to make sure they mean it, and we give them special status. Guaranteed GA work for their yards and factories in perpetuity.
That's not unlike their status under the old Empire, as I recall, said Pelion. Handy hyperspace lane just for that, too.
Well then, Neothel said, we already have a tested plan for making that work, don't we, Gil? An economic occupation is always better than a military one.
Kytus kept a careful eye on the unseen, unspoken negotiation going on right now between Neothel and Pelion. He could see the deal shaping, and that it wouldn't include him. Unlike mundane beings, Sith were never shocked by that. They expected and welcomed it.
Let's fine-tune our strategy, then, Kytus said. We isolate Fondor as planned, begin securing the orbitals, and then see if they're more open to suggestions after we've softened them up for a few hours.
Agreed, said Neothel. Remember that there's a surrender deadline in place.
I agree, said Pelion.
Kytus felt he needed to keep a closer eye on the two of them, but that was what prospective apprentices were for. He had a battle to win.
Would you object to Lieutenant Vela remaining in the Bloodfin as my liaison for the duration of the engagement, Admiral Pelion? Of course, you're welcome to send a liaison to the Anakin Solo as well.
Pelion's mistrust was clear to Force senses, but he smiled convincingly enough for the mundanes.
You could use a comlink, he said, but she's much more charming. No, you don't think that at all, do you, Pelion?
Kytus quite enjoyed the intellectual challenge of these confrontations. Polite and banal to the casual listener, but composed of layer upon layer of double meaning and double intent. He felt Tahiri bristle a little. That was good. She worked better when she was annoyed. She escorted him down to the hangar, leaving him with a Force impression of a mask held firmly in place.
How do I liaise?
She asked pointedly,
lips barely moving.
Observe.
And what added value can I bring that a remote holocam can't?
If Pelion interferes with my plan in any way, then you stop him.
Kytus's whisper was just a breath.
The Moths are far more willing, but he whips them back into line. Do you understand what I'm asking you to do?
Tahiri still wore that deceptive, I'm earnest and really quite dim expression, but the glittering black shards of her calculating mind were right there in the Force. She was a testament to the transformational power of incentive.
I think so.
Some deaths, some sacrifices are necessary, however callous they may appear.
Kytus just made sure she'd got the full meaning without his having to spell it out.
But only if they prove necessary, remember.
I understand. It's ugly, but I understand.
A last piece of bait. Place it carefully. In the end, we're fighting for a galaxy where the Anakins of this world don't have to give their lives. That's why we have to think the unthinkable.
Tahiri's edge wavered, but she recovered almost as soon as Kytus felt it.
I think living in the past is a dangerous habit, actually. I'm doing this because I think an orderly galaxy is our best defense against falling to an enemy like the Vong again.
Kytus left her standing in the passageway, hands clasped behind her back, next to the badge of the Bloodfin devouring those who forgot how dangerous an animal it was. He mulled over her parting shot all the way back to the Anakin Solo, and realized that she was warning him that she knew how he was manipulating her fixation with his brother. So did she really believe in Sith government being the best defense against traumatic war in the future? Or was she even more ambitious than he had ever realized? It didn't matter. She had that Sith sharpness now, and it was an instrument he was destined to use. Two of the bridge chronos, one set to local time, one to galactic standard time, crept forward to 2359 GST. One comm channel on each flagship's bridge was kept open for Fondor's president, but the deadline came and went, and all Kytus could hear was faint static. Ocean, Bloodfin, and the Anakin Solo were linked on audio, still waiting. Neville walked slowly around the bridge, glancing over shoulders at tracking screens and sensor displays.
"Well, I wasn't expecting a response," Neothel said, almost as if she was talking to herself. "All ships. We are now at battle stations. I expect this will now be known as the Second Battle of Fondor. I shall be operating from this command information center until further orders."
Kytus was occasionally aware of the most subliminal of sensations deep inside his skull that hinted at intense activity in hyperspace. Over the last day or so, it had been intermittent. He interpreted it as a fleet moving from place to place, dropping out of hyperspace to pause briefly before jumping again to avoid detection. The Fondorian fleet was taking a walk around the block, he thought, occasionally pausing to take a look to see who was still loitering in the neighborhood, and if they had their back turned. The Anakin Solo moved on Fondor. On either flank, vessels from both GA fleets moved into formation, and one battle group, with its X-wing squadrons streaking ahead of it, broke out of the larger formation to slip past the ring of orbitals. Kytus felt around him for the Jedi, not picking up what he expected. He knew they were here, because Luke was, but he couldn't sense how many or where they might be. He assumed the worst. Maybe as many as 100. Maybe the majority in stealth X's. But Jedi or not, numbers and big ships still counted against them. These days, no naval architect made construction mistakes like the kind that would let a single fighter take out a war machine the size of a planet. Luke Skywalker's days of dumb luck were long over. Kytus cast his worries about the Jedi aside and visualized his ships and their commanders like a grid, a mesh, a network, like the minds he should have had in place now. These were competent commanders with well-trained crews, and they only needed a little nudge to embolden them into even more decisive action. He found he didn't need to control them. All he needed was to be hyper-aware of where they were at any point in time, their state of mind, and if they needed a push to overcome hesitation caused by having a slower, limited, sensor-dominated perception of the changing situation in theater. Ocean was where he expected her to be, to port and a little astern of him.
"I can keep an eye on you, however busy I am, Admiral."
He could see the sensor screens ahead of him and around the bridge, but it was the mental image he was building that was more vivid, and in moments it was almost an overlay on his physical field of vision that he found hard to distinguish from what he could actually see. Neville turned to him.
"Long range, sir. Fondor's ground defenses are scrambling."
Sensors picked up a hailstorm of fighters scattering out into the planet's orbit, and Kytus concentrated his touch on the minds of the commanders about to encircle the planet. The first wave of X-wings streaked between the orbitals, targeting the defensive cannon emplacements on the yards as they passed. The wave of frigates and destroyers split horizontally to send one group under the orbit of the yards in a loop toward Fondor's southern pole, and the other mirroring it to the North Pole. With the X-wings keeping the Yard's defenses busy, the warships regrouped inside the orbital ring. Fondorian fighters swung around to engage them like a flock of garbs turning as one bird.
"Steady," said Kytus. "Push through. Push through."
Damage reports were now trickling in, most of them minor ones from overloaded shields, and they were diverted to the automated system to collate and estimate the impact on the fleet's effectiveness at any given point. But Kytus didn't need detail. He felt X-wings wink out of existence, each one a pang in him, and he felt the ships in the right place, the right moment. Fondor's planetary defenses hadn't opened up yet, although the ships were in range. The Yards weren't there to defend the planet. Their armament was for their own protection. There was an odd, aching lull in the battle going on in Kytus's mental chart, and for a full minute he cast around waiting for stealth X's to fountain out of nowhere and harry his vessels inside the orbital ring. He'd feel them. Whatever tricks the Jedi had, however undetectable their fighters, he would feel their racing pulses and adrenaline as they began their attack. Luke might be able to hide, but not all of them. The flotillas were through, scanning the surface of Fondor for cannon and turbolaser aimed at them, waiting for enemy targeting to try to get a lock on them and blip their sensors. There should have been the start of a bombardment by now.
"Nothing."
Neothel cut into the bridge comlink.
"Stand!"
Kytus felt something then, all right. He knew what it was a moment after it pressed like a weight behind his eyes. It was the sudden surge of drives, tension peaking, thousands upon thousands of beings exploding into action. It was the Fondorian fleet. In the slow-motion way of thoughts in battle, he had time somehow to wonder why sensors weren't showing him ships popping out of hyperspace and targeting weapons all around him. Then he saw why, with his own eyes on the monitors. The orbital yards had come alive in an instant, destroyers lifting clear of docks, smaller vessels forming up around them. Kaidas felt the precision of the maneuver without even needing to see the rapidly changing transponder icons on the holochart. Half of the ships focused on the GA elements now stuck between Fondor and the ring, and the other half turned their attention to the rest of the task force beyond. The Fondorian fleet, or a very large part of it, boiled out of the yards like cag bugs pouring from a broken drain. The sensor scans went wild.
Why didn't I feel them before, at such close quarters? Jedi.
That's where they were, putting all their effort into blocking his senses, no doubt persuading themselves that they were defending the civilian workforce or the orbitals. That fitted. Not rebel enough to come right out and fight side by side with Fondor, but pious enough to aid their
incoming! Brace, brace, brace!
Neville's voice was unnaturally calm, as it always was. But despite shields, the turbolaser volleys that struck the Anakin Solo were enough to shake the bridge and fill the viewscreen with brilliant, blinding, white-gold light. Kaidas took it in his stride. This was meant to be, to put him in the right frame of mind to win. The bridge around him distorted a little, and the colors seemed to leach out, but he recognized his anger and grabbed the reins to make it serve him. Unlike the Bloodfin's unlucky rider, he wouldn't fall and be devoured by it. He reached out to his commanders and imbued them all with a little more aggression, a little less willingness to play by the rules of engagement. Neville, looking at Kaidas's face, seemed frozen to the spot.
Ah, my eyes have changed.
They'd have to get used to that. The vague sensation of ships streaking in hyperspace had gone now.
Captain, Kaidas said, at least we know where they are, and why I didn't sense that they were waiting for us.
Second Battle of Fondor, Combat Information Center, CIC, Galactic Alliance Warship Ocean. Neothel stood with both hands braced on the holochart table in the CIC, dismayed. The removal of Jason Solo would have to wait. Fondor was putting up a credible fight, and it was turning into a long slog, longer than she'd expected. The mine network would have made life so much simpler. But she'd taken her decision, and now she had to deal with it. Admiral Macon, stranded here with her because the battle was too fierce for him to transfer back to Sarpentia, drummed his fingers on the edge of the table as he moved around it, examining it from every angle.
"And I said we'd offer them terms after we softened them up a bit."
"Admiral Neothel."
Jason's voice had an edge to it.
"I intend to break this stalemate before we lose too many ships."
"I suggest we disengage and regroup."
"We will not run."
"I said regroup."
"And then what? What kind of assault will get us any farther than we are now?"
The comm went silent. They watched the Anakin Solo's blue icon moving steadily through the three-dimensional plot, making for Fondor. Flagships did not rush into the thick of the battle and fight like frigates, but maybe Solo hadn't got to that page in the manual yet.
"He's not a team player, is he?"
Admiral Macon said quietly.
"Colonel Solo!"
Neothel rarely knew which way Jason would jump in a fight, and he was getting more unpredictable every time.
"Colonel, can you hear me?"
There was the faint chatter of static.
"Yes, Admiral."
"Please confirm your position and intentions."
"I'm advancing."
"Yes, I can see that. Why?"
"To bring this to a quicker conclusion."
Neothel looked at Macon. The veteran Moncal commander made a gesture that indicated he wasn't convinced of the firmness of Jason's grasp on the situation.
Colonel, I really think you should fall back and concentrate on managing the battle, said Neothel.
The Anakin Solo didn't deviate or decelerate.
I can do that from here. Just keep the Fondorians as busy as you can. I'm going to target Oridan City.
The ground batteries, you mean? Can you identify targets a little more precisely, please?
I mean Oridan City. As in capital, commercial capital, strategic target capital.
Wait one.
Neothel switched the comm through to Bloodfin, cutting Jason out of the circuit.
Gil, can you follow this?
Yes. He'll have to get the planetary shield down first, and we've got our hands full with the Fondorian fleet. So he's on his own.
If he didn't have a ship's company of decent beings with him, I'd be rooting for the Fondorians to do us a favor, she said. He treats that ship like it's his stealth. This fighter ace mentality infuriates me.
You can't stop him, and we have our hands full.
I've just seen your sitrep.
Yes, Cha. 2 destroyers and 8 cruisers. Even we notice those losses.
GA blue icons were clustered within the inner cordon, as they'd rapidly taken to calling the space between Fondor and its orbitals. The other side, the outer cordon, showed amber and blue icons, GA and Imperials, scattered more loosely in clusters, Star Destroyers attempting to target each other, while frigates and the rest of the battle group around each of them tried to shield them. Another blue icon, a frigate, vanished from the plot and appeared on the tote board as lost. Sometimes that happened simply when they lost power to certain systems. Neothel hoped for the latter. Macon's frustration was getting to her. Unable to fight in his own ship, he was trying to be useful. He put on a headset and listened to another comm channel, eyes closed.
Cha, he said, I know you're busy, but have you actually listened to this? The 4th Fleet elements inside the cordon?
There were too many ships for her to even begin to monitor voice traffic from individual captains.
No, should I? Yes, it's odd.
Macon didn't usually talk like that. He was precise and specific. Neothel almost dismissed it, but relented and listened in on the same comm channels. The mood and tone in the command center of a warship, even in a tight spot, was a lot quieter and more focused than holodramas depicted. Under fire, it was intense, and voices did get raised. But what she heard was not typical of her navy. One captain was urging cannon teams to blow the Fondorians apart in extremely graphic and profane terms. She winced.
Who's that? Tarpaulin. Is he drunk?
June Tarpaulin? Never. She didn't even realize he knew words like that. He was old school, very formal.
That can't be him. Work through them all. They're all doing it. It's like they've all gone collectively mad. Well, more like they've all had a few ales too many, and they want to take on the galaxy. And I don't mean incompetent, either.
Neothel was starting to worry. The more she listened, the worse it got. Commanders she'd known for years, human, Moncal, Sulliston, all species, seemed to have taken on more reckless and aggressive personas. It was no time to dissect this with Macon, but she thought of the things Luke Skywalker had told her about Jason dabbling in the darker side of the Force. Jedi could carry off some extraordinary sensory manipulation. She would have bet her pension that Jason could, too.
I'd use the phrase, fighting mad, she said.
She was cut short by the shipwide comm.
Incoming! Brace! Brace! Brace!
Neothel bent her knees and grabbed a rail to buffer the shock. The whole CIC fell quiet, apart from the faint hum of electronics. But there was no shiver from a missile or cannon round hitting the shield, so they breathed again. Destroyers like Ocean were well-armored and shielded, but nobody was taking anything for granted with an enemy that had produced the galaxy's most powerful warships and weapons before the Yuuzhan Vong War. In the CIC, there were no external viewscreens. The only images of the battle that weren't translated into sterile graphs, numbers, and moving points of light came from external holocams on every ship, or from cockpit cams. Neothel didn't want to avoid the reality. She felt she was breaking faith with her crews if she couldn't look at those balls of flame and twisted sections of hull plating spinning off red-hot into space. But to keep fighting these days, she had to find some distance. The small suffering dragged her away from the bigger picture. Then movement on a screen caught her eye, and she couldn't avoid it. A forward view from a cockpit, as a fighter crashed into the Fondorian ship it had already ripped into with cannon fire. A sudden zooming image of a Fondorian crest that was leaking flame.
I wasn't like this when the war started. Just as well the Imperials signed up,
Macon said quietly, as they watched the Anakin Solo's inexorable progress into the inner cordon.
We'd have been sliced and diced by now without them. Good old Gil,
Neothel said, still shaken.
But after this, who'll be left for Jason to sign up to make the numbers?
Anakin Solo, Fondor Inner Cordon. The Anakin Solo was in a hurry, and plowed between two orbitals on a direct course for Oridin. A wave of fighters broke from an attack on the cruiser Armistice, pounding away with turbo lasers at a yard that was venting gases into the atmosphere and headed for the destroyer. Balls of white flame flared and died in the viewscreen, gone in an instant, and Kytus couldn't tell, with his eyes at least, if they were fighters exploding or strikes on vessels. He didn't need the tracking screen to feel the ships. He was fully battle-aware now, sharing his channeled anger to embolden the commanders in his fleet, and able to shut out anything that was irrelevant to the situation at hand. If Luke tried any more stunts with illusions, he wouldn't get far. The adrenaline and pure white rage looping back to him from the individual commanders made his throat tighten. It was almost like a back-pressure effect, that the passion for the battle that he was channeling into them gained power and momentum, and siphoned back into him as a changed and magnified thing that he felt he had to vent from his chest or scream. He was out of breath. He hoped nobody noticed. It might have looked as if he were panicking.
Sir!
Neville seemed to be agitated by the battle link. He looked as if he was trying to shake it off, like someone fighting to stay awake. If he'd only given in to it, he would have felt much better. Like the others Kytus could hear, could feel, totally caught up in combat.
Sir, I'd appreciate it if you'd share your plans for breaching Fondor's shield. Because with the power we've got available, we're going to be hammering away for hours to weaken it. Can I suggest we divert Dewback to help us out?
It won't be necessary,
Kytus said. He had to get this energy out of him. It was a weight crushing his chest.
Alternative power source, you might say. I'm going to get them to drop the shield. Stand by concussion missiles.
I see.
Neville's tone said that he wanted to take this on faith, but he was struggling.
Is this like...
Captain, I know you're troubled by what you saw happen with Tebbutt, and I regret my behavior. But I'm learning to use combat powers way beyond those of the Jedi, and I wasn't fully in control of them then. I am now. Keep monitoring the shield, and as soon as you see it drop, set 10 concussion missiles to airburst over Oridin, and 2 over the shield generator plant.
Kytus made an effort to sound detached and normal. It was hard to keep his voice steady.
Don't fear me.
Very well, sir.
Neville said it in as matter-of-fact a tone as if his commander had asked for a cup of calf at an inconvenient moment. Kytus sat down in one of the command seats and watched the disk of Fondor gradually filling the viewscreen, until it had no sharply contrasted frame of black space left. His lungs demanded air. The cumulative effect of his commander's heart-pounding aggression needed out now. He could no longer pick out the individual crew and their stations around him in the Anakin Solo, just a complex tapestry of emotions.
And that was the state of near-blindness that he needed to push his way into the minds of strangers many kilometers away on the planet beneath. The dam burst in him, but it found a river channel. Kytus saw what the Fondorians operating the shield facility might see.
He had no idea what the actual location looked like, but he didn't need to waste his strength projecting his consciousness to actually observe. Any imagined scene would do to focus him as the torrent of anger and raw nerves of 100 or more commanders poured back through him. He pictured the shield generator plant, the control room, imagining it much as any other power plant in the industrialized galaxy— a wall covered in readouts and status lights, and rows of consoles around him where other workers kept an eye on the integrity of the shield and ensured that a constant power level fed it. There would be a message system, possibly an illuminated board updating staff on the security alert level, too. The exact details didn't matter, he knew, as long as he could imagine enough about what was happening in their minds to be able to latch on to some breeze of a thought in the Force and slip into their world. It was like listening for a particular noise or vibration when tuning a speeder drive. He always knew which sounds were normal, and which, however faint, however close to the threshold of his hearing, shouldn't have been there and indicated a problem. Once he heard that sound, it was the only one he could hear, blanking out all others. Kytus dropped into that white noise of the feelings and thoughts of billions on Fondor, and heard the one repeating note out of kilter with the rest. He focused. In seconds, it filled his head to the exclusion of all else. He was aware of solid, real beings moving around him on the ship, but he was now more aware of the shield generator facility 5 kilometers east of Oridin, and the minds of the control room team. There were more of them than usual. He could feel that. There was a sense of having strangers around, as if they'd called in extra staff and were running emergency operations, which fitted a facility that probably ran on standby with droids and a caretaker crew most of the time.
The fleet needs to shelter.
Kytus concentrated on projecting an impression that the GA fleet and its allies had been driven off, and now ships needed to return to base under the protection of the shield. There was urgency in it, because many of the vessels were damaged and needed to land before atmosphere vented or hulls gave way.
Open up. Let us in.
He flooded the operators' minds with an urge to get the ships to safety as soon as possible. All kinds of worries and concerns about family members who might be on board, a burning sense of saving people, of pulling out all the stops.
Now, drop the shields. We're going to crash. Let us through. For pity's sake, help us.
Shields down!
It wasn't Neville's voice, but that of the weapons officer. Kytus was still drifting in that fog of minds, drowning in their panic and urgency, and not here with the ship that was going to unleash their worst nightmare.
Conch section! Fire when ready!
Kytus tried to snap back at the moment the airburst sent a blinding, searing shockwave across the packed city.
but he was a fraction too late, and he caught a moment of pure animal terror that took his breath away. He jerked alert in his seat, wanting to complete a scream that wasn't his. He caught it in time. If he'd screamed, well, the crew thought he was crazy anyway. On the monitor, he could see a fireball spreading and debris billowing up into the atmosphere on a plume of rolling smoke. Now he needed other GA vessels to turn toward the planet and press home their advantage. He wondered if he could even move. He was drained, and for a moment he couldn't even grip the arms of his seat.
Sir!
Kytus looked up into Neville's face, suddenly reminded that the Quarren once had a son, but Kytus had forgotten his name.
And I had a daughter. She's lost to me now.
It was a sentimental thought, totally at odds with being a living weapon. He suspected it was an echo from being in the minds of people who feared the worst for their own loved ones.
Sir, Admiral Neothel is on the comm.
Tell her to wait. We need to hit Fandor hard now, before their fleet closes in on us.
The colors were coming back. The bridge looked familiar again. Kytus's head was clearing, and he could see the overlay in his mind again. The biggest cities on the planet, and the infrastructure that he would need to cripple to bring Fandor to its knees. It was like being in a pleasant trance, not fully in the present, but aware, and unwilling to snap out of it because it felt so still and perfect, as if everything in the galaxy suddenly made sense and had an answer. He was vaguely aware that the captain had darted away. He was probably stalling the Othel from another composition so he could gripe about Kytus unheard. No matter. He could gripe all he wished.
Take us in,
Kytus said to the helm officer.
Close as you can.